subcommittee. Oh, thank you, Norma. I totally forgot to
I
tell
had a soft deadline today
you.
to start
We just talked about
recording.
it. Is the subcommittee interest? And so I sent a reminder today for people to sign up for the subcommittees. We have 5 people on the Fair Ordinance Review Subcommittee so far. So that one is fully ready to go. However, on the undefined subcommittee, we only have one person who's expressed interest.
Well, maybe your reminder will get more people to respond to that.
I'm hoping that as well. But I made the deadline for this Friday, and so I will follow up with everyone on Monday regarding the status of those, and I'll at least start to, at the very least, start to schedule the fair ordinance one.
Well, and if nobody else signs up for the other one, I think that is a clear indication of where the real interest lies.
Exactly. I'm thinking the same thing. And so we'll see what happens.
Did we? I didn't know about that Fair Ordinance Committee. Was that one we had previously decided to set up, or did that come out of the other day's meeting?
That came out of last week's meeting.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh, and I'm now remembering I missed the last 45 minutes. So we decided to do. Sorry, can you just recap that
Of course,
decision for
yeah.
me?
In the last RSC meeting, we voted, the body approved one subcommittee to review the fair ordinances and make some recommendations on those. Welcome, Christian. Good to see you joined. And they also
Hello.
approved a non-defined subcommittee at this point. Ideally, that would work on one of the topics, one or two of the topics from the work plan. That we haven't got through yet. And so those are both approved. The Fair Ordinance one has 5 individuals signed up for it, so we're good to go on that one. The undefined work subcommittee only has one person expressing interest. We need at least 3. So we're kind of in a waiting pattern for that.
Got it. Okay. Thanks, Justin.
Of course.
And I'll just chime in here and say that the undefined work, the undefined subcommittee, the very specific thing that we added was the first meeting of that subcommittee, if it was pulled together, would be to define what it was going to be working on. So it doesn't stay forever an undefined subcommittee.
Correct. Yeah, the idea was that a PHB staff, me, will go ahead and give a presentation on the possible topics, which are really stemming from the work plan and giving some background and next steps and possible areas of movement. And so we'll see how that goes. And I'll keep everyone updated on Monday.
Awesome.
Moving on here to the Meet the Commissioners webpage. In the same email, I prompted people to go ahead and update their bios. This is really stemming from an effort to demonstrate the balance on the RSC, the Rental Services Commission, of demonstrating who's a landlord advocate, tenant advocate, kind of trying to better clarify that so there isn't so much confusion. I ideally will put the ticket in by Monday. We've had 2 individuals sign up. Excuse me, 2 individuals change their bios. What are our thoughts around, should I be explicit and in the bios to state, landlord or tenant advocate, depending on people's comfortability stating that, or should I just leave it as, the bio they've provided?
I sort of feel like we should go with the bio they provided, but make sure it says, I guess go with the bio provided, but then provide some feedback to say, you know, if it doesn't explicitly say I'm a housing provider and I'm the manager of multifamily units, I mean, something. I don't want it to be like an us and them.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I want enough specificity so that the whoever's looking at the commissioner website can not only say, oh, this person is a landlord, but they've also they're also a member of PTU, you know, whatever. I'm just throwing that out there as an example. And so that it's as robust as possible to demonstrate their involvement in the housing ecosystem, in the rental housing ecosystem.
Yeah, that's very similar to how I would feel about it. I wouldn't want to just officially label each person. You know, from where, like, I'm even just myself. I mean, of course, given the associations that I run, and, you know, there is a segment of landlords that I feel like I represent. But at the same time, I am very shortly removed from being a tenant myself and being a landlord. There's definitely things to where, you know, it needs to be a symbiotic relationship between landlords and tenants. It's something I'm very big on. And there's definitely, I can see scenarios to where things would make sense. And I would go, yeah, even though this sounds like it's, you know, quote unquote pro tenant, sure, it's a good idea. We should move forward with it. So I wouldn't want our committee to do anything that would in any way kind of further that divide of landlord versus tenants, you know, at least not in writing or publicly or anything like that. Cause that's, I think we all agree that's probably the us against them thing is probably one of the reasons that we're in as sticky of a situation as we have been with everything involved in the last, you know, 8 years or so. But that's how I feel about it.
Awesome. Justin, can I have your thought?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I really like the goal of not pigeonholing. And yet, I did hear so much feedback that certainly came from the community listening sessions, but then was echoed by some members. And so I have shifted a bit because it does feel like for sort of like public credibility and accountability reasons, there's a desire to see that balance. Maybe it's more from the provider and owner community, but it came up, right? So I would offer just like a friendly edit or amendment to Laura's thought, which is, I agree that we shouldn't have people sort of self-define or label, but maybe we just want, along with the bios page that gives some in-depth, there's just a PHB created document that just sort of says folks aligned with the tenant community, folks aligned with the you know, housing provider community or something, and then just list people. So that exists out there that, you know, we can point to, and that I guess folks can at least feel that alignment with. And then like an asterisk to that is the question of what to do with my position, which I was always told was like a balance between owning and managing 7,000 units in the county and then, you know, having a lot of policies internally and external advocacy wise that are tenant focused. Anyway, end of thought.
And actually, you know what, that kind of spurred a kind of a thought or memory of mine. I mean, technically in the official makeup of this committee, I believe there's a specific number, i.e. on the landlord side, a specific number set for the tenant side and a specific number set for like community public housing side. And so it might be something to where I think we already technically have labels and we might just put next to the bio which seat we're filling.
I don't think so.
I thought there was a set, well, at least when it was first established. Maybe that got changed when we were having trouble replacing people, but I thought I remember there being something like that in the original like docs where they when they created the committee.
I'll do some research.
If there is, then it makes it simple in my mind because we're filling a seat that we're filling, you know. If there isn't, then I totally agree with what both my counterparts here have said. So.
No, it's so the chapter 3.133 Rental Services Commission established is at least 7 members, no more than 13. And it says membership shall achieve a balanced citizen-based perspective encompassing knowledge, fair housing, rent-regulated, market rate, rental housing, landlord-tenant law, property management, renter-owned advocacy, rental housing access, rental housing health and safety. But take into account socioeconomic, gender, racial, ethnic, cultural, geographic diversity. But nothing about specific.
Okay. I'm probably mixing it up with some other committee I'm on, I'm sure.
No, I think you're both right. I do think that there was more intention by the mayor around it when it was first set up, like beyond what Laura just read, there was intention where it was like 6 of one side, 6 of the other, and then a vice chair that was like, someone explicitly said that at one point, Laura. And I think it was also explicitly messaged to the community to set the body up for success, even if it wasn't in those founding documents.
Yeah, I just think that, I mean, I like Christian's idea that if it were in writing, we could have something easy to point to. I think that what we have an opportunity to do actually in the sort of intro paragraph to the Meet the Commissioners is to reaffirm the intent that is not written in this charter document or this chapter thing that says the original intent remains to have a balance of members that represent all sides of the rental housing system and have a equal number of members that represent housing provision and tenant advocacy, as well as organizations such as community development or organizations that do both. I mean, so I think we could sort of get there. I'm just really not a big fan of the labeling. I would rather people really clearly articulated their connection to the rental housing ecosystem in their bio. But that's just, I mean, you know, I'm happy with what you suggested, Ian, as sort of that that separate document, because we have heard from people.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, Laura. I am in a point, given leadership, that I'm fully comfortable deferring to you on this. Okay. So I would rather go with sort of your suggestion.
And I can, you know, when I review the bios, I can go through each bio and email the commissioners to see if I can make some small changes to add some clarity to the bio itself. I can definitely do
that. Yeah, I think that would be good. Yeah, because I think, you know, Ian definitely has a point in that. I mean, it was an overarching subject yes. at the listening session. And so even if we don't put like an obvious, like bold, you know, label next to each one of us, I think we should make sure that the people's connection to either side or whatever in their public and private or professional life should be highlighted in their bios. It's kind of a, I guess it would be a requirement, so to speak, just so that way those that are concerned about that could see and notice that, oh, okay, it is pretty balanced, you know.
Right. Perfect. I will take that on.
Thank you, Justin.
Yeah, of course. Any other thoughts on this topic? Perfect. Real fast here, one item that's not on the agenda, it's just some commissioner term updates. This year, 5 terms were coming up to be renewed. Laura, Ian, Alan, Pippa, Mariah. Thank you both to Ian and Laura for agreeing to continue on, and to Alan, of course. Alan also agreed to continue on. I have yet to speak to Mariah, who was in Europe, and so she got back this week, so I will be trying to connect with them as soon as possible. But I did hear from Pippa, who will not be continuing past her term, which expires in December. I will be running a recruitment. I'm going to wait to speak to Mariah to see how she feels about continuing before I begin that process. But I wanted to let you all know that. So Ian and Laura, be on the lookout for, you know, for renewal documents, if there are any. And then I'll have to start the process to run a new solicitation for members. Just a quick little update on that process. Any questions or concerns around that?
None from me.
Awesome, awesome.
No, okay. I'm good.
Maybe we don't have time for this one today, but you know, at a certain point, it would be, maybe this is just something I'm wondering, I don't know how helpful it would be, but you know, it'd be nice to look at the terms to see how long folks are lasting, because does that mean Pippa was just on for one term?
Correct.
Yeah. And that's fine.
Did she give a reason specifically?
She did. You know, not to try to characterize what she said in the best way possible. She's, you know, a big part of the reason she's stepping down is she doesn't see the representation of both landlord and tenants on the body. It's something that Pippa's been pretty vocal about, at least since I started. And it's not really seeing the body, you know, meet what it's saying it's doing, you know, providing a forum for both landlords and tenants. And making recommendations to the city based off of around that. So it's really kind of an ideological difference with what she's ideological difference of like what she sees the body doing at this time. She's not seeing it to be effective, and she's not seeing landlords represented on the body.
Did you get the feeling it was mainly about the possible balance issue, or do you think maybe also part of it with someone like that who hasn't necessarily done a lot on the committee side from what I remember, do you think part of it could be frustration and just getting the realization at the speed at which we're actually able to do things, which obviously not being passed?
I think, you know, it's definitely a combination, and not to speak for Pippa, of course. I know that from our conversations, the lack of representation on the body has been a constant theme that at least me and her have discussed in our conversation. So I know that's probably the biggest one, but you know, it was for a multitude of reasons that she's choosing not to continue. And so I'll wait to hear from Mariah, and then I'll start the solicitation or the recruitment process for a new member.
And it is, has anyone else stepped off, but not because their term was ended?
Not to my knowledge. Yeah, Mariah had a planned sabbatical. But no one's emailed me a resignation or anything, so not at this time.
Okay.
Perfect. Any other thoughts on that section? All righty, moving along here.
Oh, wait, one more. Sorry, Justin.
Of course, go ahead.
Do you have to do a full-on recruitment for just that one spot?
Yes, I believe I do. So, yeah. I have to go through the entire process. All righty. The next topic on our agenda here is September session recommendations. I just wanted to make some space for a discussion, if necessary, around what we'll need in the next RSC full body meeting to go ahead and make some recommendations based on the long-term rent assistance topic and the 14.6% allowable rent increase topics that we've been discussing for a while here. We made some good traction this past meeting, but I just want to make some space for, you know, anything need to me on my end I need to prep for this next meeting to make sure we can make these in a timely manner. I do want to highlight some commissioner feedback or questions, recommendations regarding the proposed recommendation. So Matthew Maline was looking for, you know, information on why the 10% increase in SB 611. And Vivian made some recommendations around mediation after receiving rent assistance twice to see if the rent is at a fair rate. And so just wanted to open the floor for any discussion around prep for this and how we can incorporate this feedback from the commissioners.
So I'm not quite sure what to do with Matthew's question, except refer him to all of the background of SB 611. I mean, was he asking how come it ended up at 10% instead of 8% or 10% instead of 12?
Yes, to my knowledge, yeah.
Because that's really something that, I mean, there's lots of good documents in OLIS, and or maybe talk to someone at Oregon Law Center. So is he asking this for his own edification, or is he saying that the commission should be framing that for each other or for the public and the community of people who listen into our meetings?
The impression I got from the request was, you know, if we're going to make a recommendation to advise, you know, our local leaders to work with, you know, state legislators more closely on this topic to see if we can lower the 10% cap, having a solid background, maybe even in a recommendation of why that cap itself was developed, or just, you know, a more of an understanding for the body at large. So it could be, you know, a multitude of reasons, honestly, for the request.
Yeah. I mean, whether we like it or not, the reality is it came to 10% because of just state level negotiations between politicians, right. You know, way above our pay grade on this committee. The only reason I have that purview is because I'm on some committees at the state level where I advise some people in those meetings. And it's literally, I mean, it started out, I think, down at like the 5% level versus like a 15% level, those aren't exact numbers. And it literally was just a negotiation between politicians that were trying to get bills shoved through. That's the real reason. It was 10%.
It was a compromise.
Yes, exactly. Compromise is a much nicer way to say it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, negotiation is good too, Christian.
So I don't know if we want to, I mean, I don't care about just giving him that answer, because that's a generic answer that's true about every law that ends up being passed, that, you know, that's not secret knowledge or anything like that. But as far as like our committee getting more involved or the city, I mean, they do send their recommendation to the state legislature every year. And there's really, I mean, anything outside of that is kind of outside of our jurisdiction to where, you know, it's quite frankly, it's also at their purview that they even accept those recommendations. Of course they would, because they're on their biggest city in the state. But, you know, I mean, I don't know that there's much more we can do.
Yeah, so I think I understand the a little bit better. So basically, Matthew, if I get this right, he's saying, so if we're going to go to the city council and make a recommendation that, hey, city council, you should work with the state legislature because 10% is still too high. I mean, and I'm saying that, not, I'm not stating that that's what the commission would frame it as. I'm just saying that. That it would be good for us in our recommendation letter to capture, hey, we know how this worked at the state level and who was involved, but we think that City of Portland can still have an impact in working with state legislators because of yada, yada, yada. Is that sort of where he might be coming from? And I'm happy to just talk to him too.
You know, that was my impression, but I could be wrong. I'd be putting words in his mouth. It might have just been a question. So maybe we should touch base with him just to make sure.
And there was a, I don't know how helpful this is, but there was a, I think Sophie Peel Alignment Week article that probably got the closest I saw in the public sphere to talking about, you know, the political compromise. So I don't know if that helps, if it helps like with an explanation before the body or even just a conversation, but yeah, it was all sort of behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's plenty of information out there. We don't need to draft something new. So,
right.
And then what was the other one from Vivian?
Vivian was interested in making including a recommendation around that a landlord has to go to mediation after receiving rent assistance twice to see if the rent is set at a fair rate. And then we got feedback from, I forget who this was. I would love to, oh, this is from Annalita. I'd love to look into Vivian's proposal more. If the average rent in Portland is around $1,700 a month for one bedroom, we have outpaced Black, Latino, and Native Portlanders from being here. And we can't continue to subsidize maximizing landlord profits without some sort of check to ensure that city funds are being put to good use.
Would, I mean, it sounds like the ultimate goal there would be if out of mediation for whatever reason, it's determined that their rent isn't in line with that, which there's a lot of variables that come in, which is what rent, what fair is. But it sounds like if it isn't the intention to force the landlord to lower their rent, which I would assume would be against at least state laws, if not city law. So I'm not sure if how realistic something like that is or what their intention there is exactly. I mean, I'd rather keep going down. If we're talking mediation, I think it's much more needed on the eviction side personally, kind of like Marion mm-hmm. County does. And we had that pilot project going for a while. I mean, that's obviously not the subject they're looking for. So I don't know. It seems like that would be a committee that, or a recommendation that, with how much little time we have, it would be a recommendation where we're making a recommendation the city doesn't, it can't actually do anything about because of state laws, which has been a reason we have decided not to move forward with recommendations in the past. But,
yeah, I guess for me, this brings up again the information that we were trying to get our hands around, which we could not, this assumption that the provision of rent assistance pushes landlords to raise their rent because they know there's more rent assistance out there. And I feel like this topic is, I want to know more. I want to hear more from Vivian and Angelita on this before we make a recommendation. So I think it's worthy of more discussion because I feel like I'm missing something.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I want to hear more from them.
I'll just be a little more blunt, which is, I just worry about feasibility and any sort of legislative path that could get it done. And a big part of that is the realities of setting up an administrative system that would do that.
define fairness, you know, do micro local based analysis based on like neighborhoods and zip codes and all that. And we do a lot of that at Home4 to determine like what the voucher payment standard should be. And it's really hard work that is super nuanced and depends on like household size and AMI and fair market rents and all this stuff. And yet we achieve some consistency and run a $200 million program. So I just, I don't know, I just want to make sure that we're being clear-eyed about just a lot of those hurdles and barriers. And yet I really appreciate the, you know, the sentiment and just some like new creative thinking. And I don't want to quash that, right? Because that was what I think we were hearing in the last couple of meetings is like, hey, we need to try something new for this body to engage it differently. And I am one of the longer term members who feels like sometimes I can be a barrier to that. So I'm good with some exploration. And I just think we got to be open about what the hurdles are.
That, Ian, thank you. That's exactly where I'm at. I want to hear more about it. I want to learn more, but I also want to be realistic about what that is. And also looking at exactly what you said about what Home Forward does. So,
and I can make sure that, you know, when I build this into the agenda next time, you know, I just shoot you and a reminder, Laura, around just, you know, checking in with them during the full body meeting to see if they have more input for this. Is there anything else you anyone can think of that you would need from me on my end or just in general to, you know, help move forward the recommendations in the September session?
No, but does this tie to the recommendation follow-up structure you've got listed further down on our agenda?
Kind of. That really comes from my individual meetings with the commissioners and, you know, wanting some, for lack of a better term, accountability measure for when recommendations are made, like follow-up structure to determine if it was read, what became of it, you know, what are the fruits of our labor actually doing? And so that was really that discussion.
Okay, thanks.
Of course. Moving on here to the additional listening session / engagement session. So I put this on the agenda because I think three separate commissioners had stated their interest in hosting another session, which is definitely a possibility to be done, you know, in the winter or late fall. I wanted to float that idea with the executive committee to gauge whether or not we believe that to be a necessary undertaking, particularly with the FAIR ordinance subcommittee. You know, we'll be needing engagement with the public and landlords and tenant, you know, advocates to determine steps to be taken. And so
I feel like that's something we kind of have to do, isn't it? Didn't we kind of determine that last time? That was kind of part of the intention of this RSC, is being given a forum for that. So I would think we should be doing it at least probably twice. Oh, just once a year? Okay.
It's a yearly mandate for us to at least one, or we're supposed to get on a schedule for at least one.
Well, how does staff feel about it? Because I mean, you guys are always more limited than us.
For staff,
you know, as far as, do you actually have the hours available given the committees we researched, or is this possibly a decision that's already been made because there really isn't staff time for the second one?
Well, it would be staff, the timing of staff time, you know, so, you know, late fall or winter would have to coincide. They'd have to be when the listening session takes place, just for staff capacity. And so I also want to point out and have, you know, at the top of our minds, you know, what the body will do with the feedback we hear from the listening session. You know, we just are forming two subcommittees right now. And, you know, when we're looking at hosting two a year, we have to look at the capacity of the body itself to actually be reactive to what they could possibly hear during the listening session. And so those are some things I wanted to point out. We can definitely tackle this in late fall, you know, 6 months after the first one, or like, you know, early winter. And there is, you know, commissioner desire for that. But I just wanted to point out those things and see how you all felt about it.
I really appreciate knowing that it's a timing issue, and I think we could figure that out. I'm sort of in your camp of what do we do with the additional feedback, and and are these, you know, we've got a one-way conversation going on right now, where we're listening, we're not responding, we're not actually, you know, fully communicating. And I think that to make these listening sessions really satisfactory to the attendees, we've got to build in a response mechanism post event. And that takes time too. Like, it would be great to let all of the people who signed up to testify at the meeting that we just had in July know that, hey, we're forming two subcommittees. One of them is about the fair ordinance in response to what you did. So how can we be ready to be responsive after that event? And do we have time to do that and address the subcommittees, the work plan, these other ideas, all in 6 meetings a year? So I think it's capacity all around.
Well, I think unfortunately, just the position we're in and the reality of the world, time, as far as time goes, we really can't make promises as far as responding and taking action. But I do think we still need to make sure, I mean, 1 year definitely be a minimum. I think 2 year would be nice, if nothing else, just to give the public a sounding board. And who knows, there might be something that comes up in one of those sessions that we didn't already think of ourselves, that is a big enough issue that we decide, oh, we should make room for that, you know? So I don't know, personally, I feel like, but also at the same time, you can make a strong argument that we have one long listening session like that, and at all 6 RSC meetings, there's always a public comment session, and they don't have to keep, I don't think we require them to keep their public comments to just what's on topic for that day. So, I mean, they do have plenty of opportunities still. So I don't know. I guess I just made an argument for both sides. Me being indecisive.
You did, but a good argument. And I think I just want to clarify what I said is, I don't think that there is a requirement that we respond. I think that we continue to hear that not responding, not having some, even if it's a one-way response to what we've heard from people coming to share at the listening sessions, that hasn't gone over well. And I don't think it's a big ask, like I said, just, you know, a follow-up email or something. I think it's just something to think about. If there is staff capacity to pull it together, whether it's, you know, January or whenever it might be, sure, why not? Let's do it and see what happens. I think we just have to be realistic that, you know, if there is a really good idea that comes up, something else is going to have to drop off our plates.
And I can definitely draft an e-blast for, you know, our responsiveness to the last listening session that we could send out to, you know, the RSC and RSO mailing lists. I think that's a good idea, and I'll go ahead and draft that.
And really quick, just to clarify, because I realized I wasn't 100% clear, I do agree on just kind of a basic response, especially some people are asking questions and having stuff to where there's already a law that exists. So the response could literally be staff sending them a link, you know, of saying, hey, you said this. We think, hey, if you look into this or go to this part of the Portland Housing Bureau website where we have this information, you'd be helped or something like that, you know. I think that's totally fine. Sorry, my comment was more about the RSC as a body, you know, working it into the agenda and commenting. Obviously, we definitely can't promise that. We can't even get to our own thoughts, but who knows? There might be something big enough that we make that consideration for. So yeah, at least once a year is it should be done.
totally agree, Christian.
You know, we can, you know, keep have this discussion at the next executive committee meeting as well to see if we feel differently or if we feel more strongly. I definitely, you know, hear both sides. I mean, if we had another listening session in the winter before we made our next work plan, that could be great.
Yeah. And I would say, really, I think it should just come down to staff time, because the committees, the subcommittees we created, I think, and our meetings themselves and whatever reports are outside of that, because that's focused on stuff that can fit on the agenda. I think that has to take priority as far as staff time dedicated to RSC stuff. And we should have at least one of those listening sessions per year as kind of worked into that and juggling what we can do with that staff time. But then if staff time permits, we can have a second one. But if those subcommittees we created is creating enough work for you guys to where it's like, hey, we really can't legitimately pull off a listening session, a second listening session, then so be it. That is what it is. We chose higher priority things to put towards it, and we still have at least our minimum of one, you know.
And so, yeah, we'll revisit this, you know, once the subcommittees are up and running and I know more of the time commitments to those, I'll go ahead and, you know, put this back on the agenda for a future meeting, and I'll let you know how it's looking, probably closer to October. Give us a couple months to plan.
Awesome. And sorry, all, I have to drop off now for a last minute thing that came up. But Christian and Ian, this is all in good hands.
Thanks, Laura. Have a good day.
Laura.
See y'all later. Thank you, Justin. Thanks for calling us together.
Of course.
Bye.
Bye. Any other thoughts, questions, concerns about the additional listening session? Cool. Next on the agenda, and I just wanted to see if we, you know, want to move in this direction, is PHB research solicitation. And so I checked with my manager, While we do not have the bandwidth or like capacity or funding at this point to do an in-depth research analysis on how rent assistance affects the rental market, there is a request that the RSC can vote on and make to PHB leadership to allocate funds towards that effort. I wanted to circle back to see if this is something we want to add for a vote for the next.
That sounds good, but I feel like, haven't there been pretty good studies done on that, on like the larger cities that really put the effort into trying it, like in New York City, San Francisco? Like, when we say study or research, is it just a matter of pulling that stuff up and pulling it into a data set, or are they thinking of like actually doing more research on how it's affecting what we've done so far here in Portland and Oregon?
Good question. It would be to solicit a study, because when before she went on leave, Breon did a deep dive looking for research on this topic and couldn't find anything that was more recent than the 70s or 80s. Yeah, this area has not been, you know, as far as we can tell, researched in this capacity or enough to answer this question. And so when we at least did a deep dive looking for some research around it.
Could we maybe make, I don't think it has to be an official recommendation, but could we make a request that as just someone looks into the potential of maybe federal level grants that might be qualified for something like this? Because I mean, housing is definitely a big issue on just the national level. So I'm wondering if a city is willing to do the work, if there is maybe some additional funding out there for it or something like that. Because I mean, it would definitely be very good to have. Because that is one of the biggest debates is, hey, tenant advocates, we need rent control. And when you look at some of the cities that really went down that road, it didn't end up well for tenants or landlords, really. And because it does, it has this way of making it where some landlords who are scared go, well, if that's the maximum, that's what I raise. And all of a sudden they're not raising by an average of 3% anymore. They're raising by an average of 8%, you know? And so I wonder if it's worth looking into, but I wouldn't necessarily want to dedicate a ton of staff time to it. If there was an easy way of finding funding, of course, because it would be very good information to have. However it turns out, you know,
absolutely.
You know, it's kind of the same question of, hey, like with the recent state laws passed that has the inventory requirements that are coming up and the housing needs analysis and everything. A lot of that spurs from not just city of Portland, but statewide. We don't know what we have. So just having that data of the actual inventory at every level makes a big difference in a lot of discussions we're going to be able to have about, you know, what's going on, what's causing rents to go up or housing costs to go up. And so actually having real data on what the effects of rent control actually are, however they look, would definitely be very beneficial. But I also understand we definitely don't have the budget to say, oh yeah, let's just do it now. We'd have to find the money basically. So I guess, I don't know. Is there a way to kind of look into possible funding sources before we abandon it altogether?
Absolutely. Yeah, I can do some research to see what I can find, any grants or federal money that's available for this purpose. I think what, you know, this agenda topic was concerning would be PHB allocating money for a study. You know, what that would be, you know, a possible recommendation that the commission could make to PHB leadership, which is
to do a study though with a big enough data set to not have the caveat of it's not big enough, so we really don't know if this is accurate. There's no way they have that in their budget right now.
Right.
I mean, that's a high dollar mark. When we found that out, when we started thinking, oh, it should be easy to just allocate some money to do a study to count the number of units we have. And we got the multiple $1 million quote back on doing a study like that and found out that, okay, that's not in anyone's budget. And so I can't imagine it's even possible it's in their budget, but maybe it's in their budget to allocate some staff time towards researching other funding sources, possibly.
Yeah, I can text that myself, like that. Honestly. I will see what I can find.
I don't know. Ian, does that track with you that you'd be really surprised if they said, oh, yeah, that's in our budget to do that kind of study?
Yeah, I mean, I think the best approach that I think I had recommended a long time ago, and this might be where we did find some of those older studies, but was just HUD's PDNR, Policy Development and Research Shop. And, I just think they're best suited. Like, it's one thing to just do a market analysis. It's another to do the, you know, the voucher impact on market and rents. I don't really have any wonderful ideas on this one.
Yeah, it kind of sucks because you know that they don't have the budget to just write the check for it. So it's a great idea, but just like anything else in government, it's a great idea. Okay, how the hell do we pay for it?
I will see what I can find, and I will follow up in the next within the next week. With 8 minutes left, we'll go on to our next agenda topic, public testimony engagement. I just want to provide an update so me and my colleague, Nikki Loon-Claire, are developing a couple of web pages, ideally to help individuals really understand what to expect and what not to expect when providing public testimony. And, you know, give some tips and tricks for how to provide it and what to write, what to say, what to expect. This is being born out of a lot of feedback around from various commissioners and the public around the role of testimony, whether it should, you know, have a more kind of advisory approach where you give resources or we're simply just listening and saying thank you. And so we are in the process of the final process, final stages of developing these web pages. And then I believe we'll be asking for some feedback just around if these are proper, if these look good. So I wanted to give a heads up on that. Per Christina's request, I did reach out to every individual who signed up to provide testimony this past RSC session to see if there's a barrier, what barriers stood in their way to them actually attending or providing testimony. No one substantially responded. A few people did write in written testimony instead. And so when looking at, you know, public testimony going forward, do you think it's, does this body think it's a best practice to reach out to individuals who signed up to provide testimony but were not able to make it to see if they would like to write in their testimony instead for it to be read at the next meeting? Or that
to me, that seems like it should be a yes, if you have time and it doesn't take away from anything else we got to do. Because they did sign up, they had the option to be there. I assume on the website somewhere there is something that says you can submit, you know, written testimony of some kind, right? So, yes, it would be nice to follow up with them, but I don't want that to become enough time consuming to where it takes away from anything else, if that makes sense.
Yes,
they did know the options and they signed up and just didn't show up or didn't give their testimony at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sort of good in either direction. I mean, if it isn't too burdensome, it's nice to get feedback another way and sort of bat down some of those barriers that we know people experience. I mean, you know, those meetings are tough for me with kids and stuff. So I get why it might be hard, certainly to show up in person, but even to just hop on a Zoom call and say some things. So I like the expanded options.
Perfect. We'll see what we can do. And then once the web pages are drafted, if we are soliciting feedback, I will reach out either to the full body or just to the executive committee for pre-posting review. We have 5 minutes left. We can try to tackle recommendation follow-up structure, which, as I said earlier, really relates to what happens after we provide recommendations and what we can do to kind of ensure they're being read and listened to or, you know, considered or, you know, any feedback. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I didn't actually mean to interrupt you.
Oh, you're fine.
I was just going to say in general on that topic, it's, I don't know, that kind of seems like just a general frustration with politics is mm-hmm. our position is to send on a recommendation. It's not our position to lobby for that recommendation. It's just to send it on. And it's very clear. It's up to the city commissioner's purview on whether or not they want to give it a serious recommendation or have it move anywhere from that, or if it just stays filed until it's pertinent. So, I mean, personally, I wouldn't want to spend additional RSC meeting time on it. I mean, I was all for the sending the refresher when we had new commissioners, because maybe they didn't see the stuff that was submitted before they were elected. That made sense to me, but I don't know. I'm not a big fan on spending time and effort on trying to remind them of something we sent them. I feel like they're professionals. They have staff. I can't imagine there's any way they don't know it exists and they made a choice to read it or not. I mean, it's unfortunate, but sometimes what we do gets ignored. That's just how it is.
Mm-hmm.
But that's my blunt opinion on it, I guess.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah, this was born from a lot of commissioner feedback when in my one-on-one meetings. This was an area of frustration for a lot of folks, but I definitely hear where you're coming from, Christian.
I would love if we could consider some deeper engagement with the housing commissioner. Some ideas there could include like a select group of the RSC checking in addition to writing a letter, maybe saying a little bit more about process and like who we heard from and why it felt important to pass along those recommendations, given that they're varied. you know, in terms of the advisory nature of the body, like that is all limited, but it's sort of leans into advocacy around the substance of the body, but also I think empowering folks on it. It'd be nice to consider some follow-up there, whether that, you know, I mean, we can't just put something on the city council agenda, but if the relationship were right with the housing commissioner and the they were interested, I guess, in the recommendations, they could put it on, and then we could have folks testify and support. And then, you know, I do think there's a benefit in not too much capacity expended in just following up after a month or 3 months or something and saying, hey, you know, we sent this, and, you know, to Christian's point, you might not have looked at it. That's fine. Your call, but it felt important to us and we want to lift it back up. You know, because I know people are busy and more busy around certain times or certain issues, and maybe there's a second crack at it that could get us there. I mean, I don't know how much this would get us in terms of real outcomes. It may help there, but I think it will help us in terms of folks feeling a little bit more engaged with the group, so it doesn't kind of feel so flat. Some leadership opportunities and chances for some professional development around like testimony or other things people want to do. And I had one more thought there. Oh yeah, and then there was the advocacy beyond city council. That our charter only applies to council and city of Portland advice, but I have heard energy around folks wanting to advocate to the state for things. I think for like lifting the rent stabilization preemption, et cetera. So I could support that and would love to hear more from folks on what they think would be engaging.
I can make some space for this conversation in the next meeting.
I'm willing to have the conversation, but before we do, can you run it by the higher ups to see if that's even an option? I don't know. I've just never heard of a advisory committee to a city commission bypassing them and making a recommendation up to the state level, but that could be 100% just my ignorance and not realizing that's an option. So it's just kind of, I always stick to, I mean, part of the executive committee is managing that agenda time. And so if it's something that's not even an option legally or possible somehow, then there's not much point in it. Other if it is possible and an option, then by all means, let's talk about it. Let's see if that's something that people desire to do.
Good point, Christian. I'll make sure to do my due diligence to find out exactly what is possible when we have that discussion, so we can manage expectations and what we can and cannot do.
Justin, I know it's three. Just one quick thought on the public testimony engagement piece. I don't think that this came up just now in our conversation. I got distracted for a moment with some emergency, but there, I did hear feedback from folks about wanting to be able to respond to people in the moment. Mm-hmm. And that is always tricky. And you can kind of go from no response at all to like everyone can say whatever they want. And I'm not suggesting that, but we should potentially come back to it if we haven't addressed it, because I think that at least one person said heading around wanting to make sure that we were able to give a little bit more to people when they testify. And I'm not talking just about the listening session, I also mean the regular engagement.
Gotcha.
I really like the idea of responding to people during public testimony, and there's lots of times where I want to and I don't jump in. Because of lots of times time is limited and I don't want to, you know, end up making not having time for someone to sign up for public testimony because we took too much time going back and forth. But also two, because I feel like back when this was started originally, Ian, I'm sure you probably remember this, we had a whole meeting where the city attorney came and presented to us and basically all the legal side of us being on this committee and what we can and can't do and everything. And I feel like there was some issue there of just responding in the moment to public testimony representing a city commission, to where there's potentially some risk there. And I also noticed some of our commission committee members being attorneys, like to kind of dive into it and kind of really blur, start to get close to that line of giving what could be legal advice. And I think there might actually be some restrictions there to where this isn't really even a debate. It's kind of a, no, you're really not supposed to type of thing. With that said, I would be totally in favor of maybe, you know, staff keeping track of what's brought up. And if there is anything, you know, filtered through admin that staff is allowed to be able to say, hey, why don't you check out this website? Or, you know what, that's really something that might be covered in a current law. You should talk to a lawyer, you know, without giving legal advice or something like that, to kind of help point them in the right direction and give that kind of follow up. I would be all for, but I don't know. There's something in the back of my mind that tells me we should be concerned about giving too much advice in as part of a public committee meeting, and just responding on the fly to public testimony. So I would say ask that question and look into that, because again, I don't trust my memory more than anyone else's. So I might just have this convoluted with something else or some other committee I was on, but I feel like I remember something like that.
Gotcha. I will make note and I'll check with our legal team. We do have to end and hop off. I have a 3 p.m. I want to thank you both for being here. And
fair enough.
A follow-up for me in the next few business days.
Oh. All right. Thank you, guys. Have a good rest of your day.